ever say that progress is being made, if you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. Mm-hmm. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made. And they haven't even begun to pull a knife out, much less try and heal the wound.
You have.
They won't even admit the knife is there.
Hey everyone, welcome to the brand new episode of Techish. It's me, your co-host, Abadesi of Hustle Crew, and...
Michael Behane. I was going to do a whoop whoop, but this is quite a somber time, I guess, really. It's not really maybe the moment for over-exuberance, man. Like, obviously, we've got to start with what's been happening now in the world, in the US particularly. Abba, you were just telling me off mic, you kind of had to, you know, take a step back from social media just for a little bit. Give us the backdrop a little bit and then we'll go into that.
So Black Lives Matter, this is what we're talking about Black Lives Matter. We're talking about the recent killings that have been happening, police brutality, same old story. It's so frustrating that we find ourselves here again. In many ways, it's almost like, for me especially, feeling like we're back in 2015, 2016 era, just being back in the same place again. Most recently, events have been kicked off because of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor. It's the same stuff. Structural oppression, daily racism, daily microaggressions, a complete lack of interest, care, support from the same people that borrow our culture, profit off our culture. I think things came to a head this weekend just gone past because of the protests, because of the violent response of states to the protests, and because, especially within tech, the world that we are in, the very deafening silence of certain people in our industry not responding to it. Now, you know, I, for example, saw Cindy Gallup saying how no one on Clubhouse was talking about this, Clubhouse being the app that we mentioned last episode, big hype. All the VCs are on that social network. Things have since changed. I've noticed that in the last 24 or 36 hours, quite a few different people, Jen Rubio, Stuart Butterfield, now being very vocal about the cash they're putting forward to support Black communities and the Black movement. But I'm not going to pretend I'm okay right now, because I'm not okay. I'm fucking tired. I'm angry. I'm disappointed. I'm sad. I feel hopeless. I want to stay positive, but it's so hard. And I was walking around today. I had to do some errands, you know, woke up early, walked to the shops. I just suddenly realized, like, damn it, I don't even have enough Black people around me where I live. I want to change that. And then I started jumping into group chats, trying to, like, you know, inspire some activism amongst my friends. Started realizing I'm like the only Black person in some of these group chats. What is my life, man? I don't know. It's been a really interesting time.
All at me, man.
Obviously, there are some group chats which are only Black, and I'm in those. Yeah. But I think we're feeling a lot of pain right now, and I think it's not a new trauma. It's just a reopening of an old wound. And I think one of the things that I personally have been finding really frustrating in all of this is the white victimhood that's coming out. A lot of people I saw on social media somehow were making this about them. Like, oh my God, I can't even believe what I'm reading, or, oh, this is so depressing, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, white being the default in everything, the last thing we need is them to then also pull the attention away from that. I mean, there are literally white people saying they were suffering reading this news, which felt so tone deaf.
Yeah, just donate your money and shut up, please. And just do a quick hashtag, maybe that's about it. I don't even want to center the conversation, particularly around quote-unquote white allies, but just to quickly on it, listen, going to the protests is all good, and going to the protests in Black areas is all good. I don't necessarily particularly agree with that. I feel like go protest in the suburbs, go protest where your actual community is. And then the next time you're at dinner with your racist uncle, say something. Because we can't go there. We can't go to your family dinner. We can't go to the suburbs and start protesting. I mean, we can, but I think we'd get flipping thrown out within a second, right? So do what you can within your own community. This is as old as time. Malcolm X talked about it when he had his organization just before he died. And people, he said, listen, we're open to white members, but we see this as a form of you know, people go to Africa and want to go help, as in that kind of
white savior, white savior mentality. Yeah.
Go to where you are in the majority and work there, because we can't go there. Do you see what I'm saying? And there's also been this whole concept where I'm seeing a lot of the actual violence that's happening during the protests
by white people.
Because, listen, every time there's a protest, there are sections of society that are anarchists and they're just waiting for anything to blow up, basically. And they don't necessarily care particularly about the cause per se. I've seen a lot of black activists stopping people trying to riot, saying like, yo, not this store. This is our local store. Don't do this, right? And it's even complicated when you look at how in Atlanta, where there has been some protests that have gone a bit left at certain points, you're looking at majority black businesses, you're looking at majority black community, and even majority black police, which is a further complication. And you've got white rioters just effing shit up. Is this meant to be in the name of Black Lives Matter? I don't know, right? You know, last episode, we were talking about how the individual acts of racism leads to the systemic. So obviously, we saw the thing with Christian Cooper, the birdwatcher gentleman. You saw that one, right?
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it all, but I know what happened.
Yeah. And then there was the other situation where a bunch of young black founders also go into like their local WeWork gym, and they were stopped by, it turns out, was a VC. And the VC was like, what are you guys doing here? Do you guys work here? What? Let me see your ID. And that went viral. In fact, I posted that on the Pocket account, actually. And I was just like, you know what? In a parallel universe, these guys would have pitched this guy. Because this is like, I think it was in Minneapolis. There probably aren't that many VCs in Minneapolis. So if these guys were looking for venture-backed funding, they would have probably gone to this person's meeting or taken a meeting with this individual. And then here he is in another context, racially profiling them, telling them, you don't deserve to be in this gym. Let me see your ID. I don't believe that you're here. And it just depresses me. Like, Abba, how many times have you probably gone and pitched a VC and in a different context, they'd be side-eyeing you in a public space saying, what are you, do you get where I'm coming from?
Of course, I'm judged at face value all the time. Too black, too female, too young, too old, too whatever. Of course.
So obviously we're going to take it more of a tech angle because that's why you come to us. Trump basically tweeted something along the lines of, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, quote verbatim. And Twitter pulled down the tweet saying that essentially it's glorifying violence. Trump's pretty much had a free reign on Twitter for the whole time and basically got elected back on Twitter. But now Twitter's made a stand and said that's a tweet too far. And Facebook didn't do anything along those lines and let him post that there. And I think some staff members at Facebook have actually complained publicly, which is a big bloody deal. What are your thoughts? Who had it right, Twitter or Facebook? I think I know your answer, but just like flesh it out for me.
It's just so interesting. Like, why now? Why do you think now? Mm. When Twitter's been under so much fire, Alex Jones, I mean, just go back to old episodes of Techish. We've discussed this topic so many times. I want to know why now. Did someone do some number crunching? Did someone work out that things are different now because of the levels of unemployment, because of the number of people who literally are on the breadline and who have nothing to lose and can now put themselves in a position where they're going to act on their words. And suddenly it's like, oh, okay, the cost seems greater now. Let's do something. It just feels, I don't know. I just wonder why now. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Michael. And then on the Facebook thing, it's interesting. I was on Tech Meme earlier and I saw that Zuck and 45 had a telephone conversation over the weekend that both parties described as productive. I mean, look, I think we've discussed the incentives of these organizations so much in the past. And I think, you know, I'm very aware of the fact that Facebook is a publicly traded company. It's never really shied away from its goals to deliver value to its shareholders. It's always kept that front of mind, and it's not acting outside of that policy as far as I can see.
So essentially you've got the president of the United States basically doing a call to arms saying to the police, listen fam, it's open season, go hurt these protesters. That's how I see it, because although he mentioned looters, I believe that that was a generic call to arms. And the fact that Facebook is saying that's cool, that's kosher, I think Zuckerberg is very aware of his duties to his shareholders, and that's what he's prioritized. And I think Jack Dorsey, as much flaws as he has, I still think there is a semblance of humanity there.
Yes.
And I still think there is a semblance where, okay, you know what? We've done maybe a disservice to the American public by letting Trump have such a free reign, but enough's enough. And he's just literally just applying the T's and C's. You are not allowed to promote violence on Twitter.
Yeah.
And Trump has done that like throughout constantly, right? So I give credit to Twitter. Honestly.
I also think it's interesting because it makes you start to think things like, who will Jack Dorsey vote for in November?
Mm.
And who will Mark Zuckerberg vote for?
He donated to Yang, didn't he? He donated to Yang. He donated millions of dollars to the Yang campaign.
Yeah, and I saw he did a live video chat with him. One of the Techish fans sent it to us on Instagram. Thanks so much. But, you know, it's it, 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 it's interesting because I feel like now more than ever, we have to look at every single institution and individual and question their motives and question their incentives. Mm-hmm. And that's the most useful tool for critical analysis we have right now. And I think just to that point you made, we do see like some sense of Jack's personal values finally coming through and finally taking that risk and being like, okay, let's just, we have to draw a line somewhere. I'm still waiting to see that from Facebook and a number of other people within tech. I mean, I'm not going to lie, like the response of white men in tech who I admire, who are in my network, has been somewhat lacking. There have only been a couple I can think of that have explicitly said, I am complicit in racism, racist systems. I am racist. White people are racist. I want to do better. This is what I'm doing today. Donating to ACLU, you know, promising to, you know, work on this, read this, support Black people in my network. I still don't really see that many people having the courage to label themselves racist yet.
And I'm not even asking you for all that. I just want you to come out and say the system that we have now is unconscionable. It has to be upended and changed.
But you can't say that unless you admit the role you play in it. That's the thing. You can't do one without the other. Yeah. Like you can't stand on the sidelines and go, oh, that system over there, that one. Yeah. That's really bad.
I'm talking the bare minimum is what I'm telling you. I'm saying if you're not doing that, at least if you're not calling this out, if you're saying this is an issue that's like over there and it's nothing to do with me, that's a Black people problem, then you are the problem. Definitely at the bare minimum. These are your fellow citizens, Black, white or whatever. So say something and do something with all the resources and money that you've made. What do you make about this whole situation now where like there's a whole bunch of companies that are profited of Black culture and, you know, there's been people pressurizing them on social media to come out and make a statement? Because I personally feel like a lot of these statements are just empty.
Of course.
Like, without money.
I mean, what's up? For me, I was just thinking about how I need to divest from most of the companies I invest in right now, which are majority white owned, majority white employed.
Name some names.
Big tech. I've been saying this before. I've said this a million times. I want to take my company off Google Suite. I want to not rely on Amazon. I mean, my book is on Amazon, so I need to really think about that. But I mean, I'm just looking around like what I'm wearing. I'm freaking wearing like a Gap jumpsuit. What the hell am I doing, man? Like I have my Apple iPhone in my pocket. Like even really, really small things. Like I do my supermarket shopping at the biggest local supermarket because that's easy and obvious to me. But I was like, you know what? Every action is an act of defiance, isn't it? And I feel like I need to remember that and I need to do that more. I was looking at Kalia, the founder of Jami, J-A-M-I-I, a membership here in the UK to support Black British businesses. And she was posting these photos over the weekend. She was like decked out head to toe in products by Black owned companies. And I was like, okay, it can't be that hard. Like, let's do more of that. So I'm not going to be pushing white people to do their virtue signaling or whatever the hell, make me feel slightly better about the fact I'm spending money on their stuff. I'm playing the longer game where it's like, I want to actually transfer money because money is power in capitalism. Mm. I want to transfer it out of your hands into the hands of people who are less empowered. And that is Black-owned businesses. So I think now more than ever, you know, you were posting about, was it Kwanda earlier?
Yeah, Kwanda. Yeah. Let me explain what Kwanda is. Kwanda is basically it's like a community hub for donating to Black causes. So essentially you can subscribe for as little as $1 a month and then that money is collected into a pot and then the people who have donated vote on causes and initiatives to download. So at the moment, so to vote to donate to. So for example, let's say there's $10,000 in the pot. We might say $5,000 is going to go to this charity to bail out these protesters, for example. So that's an example of basically collective finance, collective pooling our resources to work together, right? But going back to the divesting, you sent me a link actually about Off-White. So Off-White is Kanye's boy's Virgil?
Virgil Abloh.
He basically, you know, has a majority white staff. I think it's completely white staff, right? And people were saying like, yo, how can we support this, right? I don't know if you buy Off-White.
I haven't fact-checked that, by the way. So that was trending on Twitter. I have not fact-checked this. I don't have the stats on this. But what I was saying was due diligence is due diligence. You can't even assume just because a Black person is at the face of it or the head of it, it actually is still living the values that you want to live. So yeah, I mean, I think we just, we're just reminded right now how much more work this is on every level. Like, it's not even just about what we're talking about, what we're doing, where we're spending. It's also about then like properly investigating where it all ends up. And it is hard. It's not easy. I'm not going to like stand here pretending like it's easy, because I myself find it hard. But what is inspiring and helpful is that people are innovating in this space and making it easier for us to do this work, just like things like Kwanda, just like things like Jami. And I think, you know, it's only the beginning. Like, I think of things like Ethel's Club now. And there's only going to be more and more and more of these pro-Black communities, pro-Black products. And I think it takes a really long time to understand the value of why it's so important. I mean, this idea of like, you know, not fighting for a seat at the table, but making our own table is decades in the making, decades in the making. You know, even you and I, we're diversity entrepreneurs, but we're standing on the shoulders of giants, the people that made sacrifices before. And I think what I at least will take out of this is that it is a battle of a lifetime. We just gotta keep our eyes open and stay awake, because the battlefield is always changing. But we have to always be doing something towards driving change and something towards empowering Black people.
Amen, amen. Do you know what, actually, though, on celebrity culture, I feel like that's taken a blow, because so many, like, either Black celebs or just celebs in general have just come out and said the wrong thing and just, like, made you realize, like, how dumb they are.
Yes.
I feel like there is a collective guilt that we all have when we realize that we've been propping up the most vapid individuals ever. And then when it comes time for that real shit, and we're like, yo, what is so-and-so saying? Like, what are you doing? And they're just like, all lives matter. And you're like, oh my Lord, what have we been doing? Like, why have we been propping this person up? And I want to give a shout out to John Boyega. So John Boyega is Finn from Star Wars, if you don't know. You know, he made a whole bunch of money off Star Wars. He's probably been in some of the biggest box office films of all time just by the fact that he was in the latest Star Wars trilogy. And he went on his Instagram Live and he just started tearing people a new one.
So I say it again, fuck you racist white people. I said what I said.
There are a lot of people in his position who are Hollywood, mainstream, next movie they're getting a $5-10 million check. They're not going to say that because they don't want to jeopardize their position, because you don't want to be seen as the angry Black dude or as the person who's a bit of a troublemaker, right? So I got to give credit to John Boyega. He seems to be the one of the few people who's done it right. A lot of celebrities have just been talking nonsense. But I feel like also we got to stop propping people up. That's the other thing. We've got to stop idolizing people who are just non-serious. I know it's hard because you want to have fun and just like...
Yeah, we're not holding people accountable to values though. We're not examining people based on their ethics or their moral code or their participation in creating 100%. The society we want. That's the thing, right? And 100%. I think maybe that is something that we need to acknowledge as a society, and people who are listening who have family, friends, even children, you know, think about what values we are supporting and which values we are judging ourselves by and judging the world around us by. You know, we're judging people like celebrities at face value. Oh, do you entertain me? Yes, great. Do you amuse me? Yes, great. But what we're forgetting is, as participants in capitalism, the people with the most money have the most power to drive change. So we need to be asking more for our celebrities. It's not enough to amuse us. It's not enough to entertain us. If you are going to be in the next global movie smash success, you have this incredible platform to drive change way more than a grassroots campaigner can do. And I think you need to use that. And one thing I'll say on that point around people who have really messed up versus people who have like come out speaking, there's one thing, like, one, internalized oppression is real. And we have to ourselves remember that. Even as we've been trying to come up in the game, there have been other Black entrepreneurs we've reached out to who had no interest in helping us. Because in their mind, yeah, in their mind, there's only space for one token, and they're it's taking it up. And one, internalized oppression is real. I do workshops all the time where women believe that they're inferior to men. Wow. And that is because we've been hearing all these stories all this time, very, very believable, but not evidence-based stories about that. And they believe that. And then the second thing I want to say, this actually relates to the backlash that came from like hashtag Black AF. What you start to understand is that, like, if we think about Kimberlé Crenshaw's concept of intersectionality and the fact that, like, you know, all the different identifiers from like sex to gender to race can impact how you navigate society and how systems of oppression can impact you, someone can be Black, but also be very, very wealthy. And therefore, with that wealth privilege, stop experiencing a lot of the types of oppression that other Black people who are less wealthy feel. And I think something really interesting happens with very privileged Black people or very privileged members of the LGBTQIA plus community, you know, because it's like they gain all of this privilege sometimes without really fully appreciating it or acknowledging it, but then still feel like they can empathize with all of the experiences of Black people. And that's when they tend to then start talking out and you're just like, nah, like, I don't know where you heard that or were feeling that, but that is not what I think or feel. You know what I mean?
Well, the worst one is like people like OJ, like Jay had him in that song where it's like, I'm not Black, I'm OJ. Basically, he swore himself a separate and then when he got arrested for the murder trial, all of a sudden it was like pro-Black this and like, I'm going to the Black churches looking for some reprieve, like, please help me. So oftentimes you're reminded of your Blackness when the system reminds you that you're Black, even though for a long period of time you've done everything you can to kind of separate yourself and hold yourself distinct.
One thing I was going to say is, if I were in a position of driving policy change right now, off the back of this conversation, off the back of responses to, oh, this tech company said this, this company I love said this, this celebrity I love said this. If we can introduce gender pay gap reporting in the UK, and if companies that are public have to file all this incredible amount of data to SEC and whatnot all the time, la, 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 why can't we legislate for companies to, every year, just like they're doing their annual reports, give me that demographic data? Because I'm sick of waiting. I'm sick of that being an opt-in. I want to know it now. I want to know how many Black people work at every level of your organization now. That matters to me. That's important to me. And I just think it's absolutely ridiculous that it's still like an opt-in to give us that information, because I made a decision that in a racist society, I don't want to invest in racist people. I want to invest in people that are showing me they're actively empowering Black people. But I don't have the information to do that right now. And I have to like use my own time to fill in the dots. Like, where is this legislation? That's what I want to see. I want reporting now.
What are the causes that you donate to? Because a lot of corporations, they do donate to causes, especially like political campaigns, certain charities. You know, you might be a big company, like we're going to give, you know, $1 million to, you know, animal rights, which is all well and good. Don't get twisted. But can we make sure that Black people have human rights first? Do you see what I'm saying? Can we just go there? Because you know what? A lot of people respect dogs more than they respect Black people.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think of their time and money and thing, right? So if you're a company that sells quote-unquote urban clothing, which I hate that phrase, right, which is, there are a lot of these e-commerce like pretty little things, whatever, right, Fashion Nova, for example, right, you're profiting off Black culture, probably not Black owned, right? Where's your money going? Where's that little 1% charitable donation? I want to know what causes you're donating to, on top of how many Black people work at your company. Like, tell me. Do you see what I'm saying? A few companies now have been bullied into donating money, and I'll say bullied into it because it's out of duress. They didn't want to do this initially, right? But I want to see that continue. Because if you're going to profit off Black culture, you need to be putting dollars back into the community. You know what I'm saying? It's not a take, take, take. And if it is, we've got to divest. Do you know what I'm saying? We've got to stop propping these people up.
I don't like receiving information like this that is directly through the company in a way that they get to narrate it, because the power of marketing is real. I feel more comfortable knowing that it's something that has to be declared to an independent body or like a third party and then disseminated for public consumption. In an ideal world, that is what I would like to see, because I've realized over the last few days how easy it is for companies to distort information or, you know, play on our emotions. And so, you know, it's confusing enough as it is. So I was just like, why can't we just have that data and that data be clear?
And then one last point on this. So this has been dubbed the Grace Uprising across the US since 1968, which is the year MLK died. So that says something. And you know what? I saw a tweet that was quite ominous, which essentially said, wait till you see what happens if these individuals are found innocent. So the cop who had the knee on George Floyd's neck, you know, he's been charged third degree murder, which is quite a weak source. But if these individuals are found innocent, just like the Rodney King beatings all the way back in LA, the cops in question were not fully prosecuted and convicted, I generally worry what will happen. And, you know, last episode, a few episodes back, I was talking about Jeff Bezos and like, as I, Jeff, man, start paying your taxes because the pitchforks are warming up. Mm-hmm. I think if I listen back to all of our episodes, I'm not trying to say that I'm a sage or a prophet. I'm not whatsoever.
Okay.
But I've always had that feeling where I was like, yo, this is obviously separate. This is an economic issue, but pay your taxes, because you know what? It's going to be like South Africa where you need armored plating in your car. It's when you ignore issues that you feel like don't affect you, whether that's economic inequality or racism within the police system or general racism. It doesn't affect me until the day that it does, because What's that? I'm gonna go real corny, but what's that African proverb that essentially says the child who doesn't feel the warmth of the village will burn it down to feel the warmth, basically. And I think that's what we're seeing. Like, if this was any other country in the world from an external perspective, like an Iran or the Hong Kong protests, we would look upon it as like, oh, that's a fundamentally broken society. Like, oh, look at the Iranian protesters. They're getting beaten up by the Iranian state police, or the Hong Kong protesters getting beaten up by the Chinese police. Look at that. But when it's, you know, in the West, we look upon it and say, oh, it's just an in-house issue. We'll fix it. But no, I think this is, you know, highlighting that our societies are fundamentally broken. And that's how I see it. We'll leave it at that depressing note. So on a different tangent, we're going to go back into our tech bag. Did you see the news about how Microsoft has laid off a whole bunch of their journalists and replaced them with AI?
Yeah, so, that's crazy. So what are you going to do? You're just going to read robotic reports and have no human input at all?
MSN website, I haven't been on there for years, fam. But basically, I think a lot of the journalistic work is just regurgitating what has appeared in other publications and then just like putting the headlines and whatnot. So a lot of the journalists probably were doing manual work, looking at headlines and then just copy and pasting and just editing, whatever. And essentially, I guess the AI in-house at Microsoft is now strong enough that that grunt work can be outsourced to the AI, right? And one of the journalists was quoted as saying, I read all about AI and artificial intelligence replacing jobs, and I saw it as kind of just like, you know, an academic subject, but now I've been replaced, right?
Right.
And this is the beginning of a trend. I think we're going to hit an in-between stage where like the AI will work in tandem with white-collar work, but eventually a lot of white-collar jobs will be displaced.
I think it's interesting because I feel like this is a kind of constant theme that's been happening. Robots are taking our jobs. Robots are taking our jobs. I think it's not really happening at the scale that the most, I'd say, dramatic reports have, you know, have indicated. So in this particular case, 50 jobs are affected, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. That's 50 in the US, according to Business Insider, 27 in the UK, according to The Guardian. Okay, 77 people out of a company the size of Microsoft.
Mm.
It's not enough for me to start worrying, really.
Right.
And I think what we forget as well is like, often when we discuss this idea of robots replacing jobs, we assume the amount of jobs is finite. But what we forget is that there's also new roles created as a consequence of us, you know, using AI more and more, like greater applications of AI. As we've discussed in the past, you know, whether that's like more design roles. You know, I know someone who's a conversation designer, so she actually writes the scripts of what people say. More and more people involved in AI ethicists as AI. So I think it's one of those things where like this takeover is going to play out over the course of our lifetime. It's not going to be like an accelerated War of the Worlds kind of event that just suddenly like boom, you know, they've landed. Yeah. Let's go. I think we'll see it happen, you know, case by case, just like this. But I think it's very, very slow. So for example, I was even thinking how a lot of people feel like self-driving cars are gonna just happen really soon. But if you actually really think about it, and if anyone like I have had the pleasure of, you know, doing, has actually gone into a lab where they're being developed and spoken to people that are building them, it's a while away. Because I was like, I'm not going to learn how to drive, so I could just wait for an autonomous vehicle. And the engineer was like, no, you should learn how to drive.
Basically, it's more hype. But no, do you think COVID, I mean, like in the States, I think there's like 40 million unemployed. Do you think COVID will be an accelerant in the sense that now that all those jobs have kind of been displaced, that maybe the owners of companies might say, you know, instead of hiring people back up, why don't we start looking at what software we can use just to replace, you know, individuals? Or do you think now you're like, you hold firm to your initial assessment that this is overhyped?
I didn't say it's overhyped. All I'm saying is the speed of change is overhyped. I believe that this will happen. And I think the point you've made is absolutely right. I think there are a lot of people here who see an opportunity. And I see on both sides, I think decision makers and companies who are like, okay, do we need people to do this job? As well as the people who are innovating in this space, because there are a lot of incredible tech companies who are basically providing these automated services to companies. Mm. You know, their whole pitch is fire 100 people, hire one, you know, invest in one SaaS subscription. So I definitely think it could be accelerated. More and more, especially as every day goes on, especially with what's happening, as each day goes on, especially with what's happening in the Black Lives Matter movement and protests around the world, I am starting to be more and more convinced that things are going to be forever changed when we go back, in every sense of the word. So maybe to your point, also in terms of attitudes towards automation.
I know there's been so much in the news. Did you follow the SpaceX making the first successful launch from a US? I think essentially what SpaceX did is that this is the first launch from an American rocket ship for many, many years. Essentially, the US had given up on producing rocket ships. And now there's been NASA astronauts that have docked with the International Space Station.
Yeah, two white men.
In space again.
Dude, you know what I was thinking? I was like, there is literally no space that white supremacy has not conquered. Like, Earth is fucked. I can't have fun here. Now they're going to space? I can't even go have fun in space? Oh my lord.
Nah, but you know, like, what? There was a black woman astronaut many years ago. I forgot her name. I'll put it in the show notes. But she was the first black woman in space not too long ago. But this is like in the 80s and 90s. So,
I saw Hidden Figures. I know. But it's just weird because I just feel like there's this romanticism around space.
Yeah, and you're not a fan of space, are you?
Don't hate on me, man. I love space.
You don't like space.
Are you kidding me? Like, Interstellar is like one of my favorite films. I love space. But what I'm trying to say is I'm in this new, brave new world, right, of 2020, I'm starting to question a lot of things. And I remember once watching Frank Boyle, the Scottish comedian, on Channel 4, making the argument that Hollywood is US propaganda. And I've been thinking about this. No, but dude, hang on. Space is US propaganda. And the thing about our love for space is that our love for space is tied up in this American capitalist vision of exploration.
Yeah.
Which is probably a bit too neocolonial for me, if I'm going to be honest. So yeah, I do have issues with space. Like, I don't have issues with space as a concept. Like, I love planets, I love everything. But I do not like the way space exploration is happening. I mean, what, even in a previous episode, we talked about the guy who was like the man in India, the entrepreneur in India, who's going to go mine on the moon. And then all the guys in Silicon Valley got annoyed because they wanted the first chance. All I'm saying is, look at what's happening around us, everyone. Look at the systems we've created. Do we really think we need to go to other places with these ideas we have? Like, our ideas are bad. We need to sort stuff out here first. And the last thing we need to do is send two white guys to space. I was very frustrated of how much attention it pulled away from what really matters. Like, the world here is burning and everyone's happy that two people successfully went up and landed. I'm not trying to negate or diminish the incredible accomplishment that was made. But in terms of a prioritization exercise, what's most important for humanity, honestly, right now, exploring space is not important to me. If my brothers and sisters are not treated like human beings.
I do agree with you. I think there is a failure of human prioritization. Like, are there other things that we could be focusing on Earth? But you know what? Maybe the propaganda have worked on me, fam. I've watched too much Star Trek and Star Wars, and I'm like, yeah, this is dope. I've been propaganda, and I've been brainwashed to the point where, like, because you know what? I saw the interior of the SpaceX, and they compared it with the interior of the previous NASA rocket ships, and the previous NASA rocket ship looked like it had all these buttons and switches, and it was so complicated. But then the SpaceX one had like an iPad. I was like, I'm not gonna lie, this is dope. Wow. I put the picture in the photo because I was like, this shit's looking hard. But no, you're right. On a serious note, I think you're right. Like, the privatization of space also worries me. Like, this is a private company, and the profit motive going into space. Like, what's going to happen? Are we going to start drilling on the moon? We're going to start drilling in on, you know, asteroids. Like, you know, are there going to be a few more trillionaires, you know, made because of this? And it's probably just going to accelerate wealth inequality here on Earth. But I got to give props to the ingenuity, because I think the US, before Elon, you know, pushed the matter, there was a thing where, like, we're not going back to the moon. Who the hell cares, basically, right? That's done and dusted. And I think there is a value in having those capabilities. I think
there is a value. Like, I'm sorry, but so much money goes into this. Like, we just started the show talking about how we need to be putting money into social justice campaigns and people that are really driving change in society. I mean, it's a drop in the ocean compared to the amount of money that's being put in space innovation. And, like, I'm sorry, I'm not even convinced there's anything out there, for goodness sake. Like,
but I think we had this discussion like once a year, but like, I think the technology that ends up taking us to space ends up impacting our daily lives. And for example, the US government poured in a lot of money into the internet as a military application and GPS for military applications. But you know what? Now, if it weren't for these smartphones, I don't know how many of these cops would get exposed. I'm keeping it real. I think racism has always existed and probably was worse, but now it's being filmed. So that's a reach, obviously. I'm drawing a massive link between, you know, technology developed by the US government and then the smartphone in our hand, but there is a link. So technology, for the sake of technology, I'm not against, because there's money being poured into even worse things. There's money being poured into oil drilling. There's money being poured into building prisons. I'd rather stop that first before I say, yo, let's not go to space. That's my personal perspective, because I feel like technology for its own sake is still a good thing. My personal perspective, though. That's maybe my bias. And maybe I have been propagandized by Star Wars and Star Trek.
You have, man. You have. I don't want to tell you what is, but it kind of is. That's what I'm saying.
Beat me up, Cody. Beat me up. That's what I'm saying, isn't it? Beat
me up. There was only like two black people in that whole series. Anyway, let's just stop, because Deep Space Nine was my jam. Or was it Next Generation? I like Next Generation. Anyway.
Yeah, Geordi LaForge was a bad man. Don't hate on Geordi. That's what I'm saying. Yo, everyone. Thank you for listening. Obviously, this has been a very heavy episode of a lot of deep stuff. Hopefully, in the future, we can just talk about more lighthearted tech stories. But obviously, a lot of this stuff had to be covered because it's just a crazy time. But thank you for supporting. Hit us up on the hashtag Techish. Like, we really want to hear your feedback. Obviously, a lot of this stuff might have been triggering, but we would still love to hear from you. And support us on Patreon. We've got like a extra-ish, our podcast, where we just exclusively talk about stuff for our Patreon listeners. Yeah, we'll catch you next week. Stay strong, stay alert,
and reach out to us, Michael and I. Yes. We love to hear from you. I know sometimes hashtag techish, you kind of want to go a bit more private. You want to hit us up on the DMs. Look, we are a global community. We do this because we care. So if you want to talk, reach out.
And also, thank you to everybody who came to our event, our virtual event with WhatsApp engineer Wayne Jackson. That went down a storm. That was really fun.
So nice to see all of you, the ones who could make it.
Yeah, the ones that can make it.
More will come. Yeah. Don't worry. We'll be together again soon.
Yeah, we'll be, hopefully in person as well. All right. Peace, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.
All right.